Blog Talk Radio.
Say you want a revolution, Elite.
Always.
Is that what you want?
Yes.
Welcome to the revolution. It won't be televised. The revolution won't be televised, but you could turn on
revolution.
Radio and hear us. Welcome, people. Welcome to She's Raising the Bar Blog Talk Radio.
Woohoo!
Coming at you live and kicking every Monday, 1 o'clock. We're here to serve you. Yes, we are. And we've been doing that for the past 7 years.
So it was 8 years.
No, it's seven. Actually, I looked it up.
Oh,
it's seven.
Okay.
I've been saying eight. It just, I don't know why. I just, even with the two different formats, it's seven.
Really?
Yeah. Because I was checking
right.
The records. Yeah, no. 7 years. 7 years. But
wow.
You know, but wait a second. You're forgetting we're coming up on 8 years.
April. It was April.
April. That's exactly right. It was April. And when we were the Bridal Body Shop,
mm-hmm.
It was like April something like... April 23rd or something like that, because it was Bridal Week in New York.
Oh, okay.
And we lined it up so that our...
Perfectly to go together.
Yeah.
And
so,
sync.
Yeah. That's what we do. That's what, you know, this is anybody
who
wants to try this at home, it's not easy. There's a lot of practice
no.
involved, so just be careful if you do try.
Right.
Cast of characters for the people that are just tuning in and wondering what this banter is all about. Cast of characters are.
Two. I'll go first.
Oh,
to my right.
Oh, wow.
Is the lovely and talented and ever most.
You're speechless.
Yeah.
But
it's just like I can't even get the words out.
That's.
But.
Yes.
Lori Towers.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you. And
you make me lose my words.
I know. But that's, you know, sometimes that's
something.
Good, sometimes it's bad. But to my left. And sitting to my left and always close to my heart,
oh,
Lily Zygmunt.
Thank
you. You.
You
know something? I want. We need our
sound effects.
We need our sound effects. We had last minute studio problems, so we're working with half the board.
Doing the best that we can.
Working with half the board we normally have, but we usually have nice sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
We usually have the clapping. We have a lot of good
laughing.
Things. Yeah,
crickets.
The cricket is usually used for
okay.
You.
Okay, I just... I'm just saying,
but we usually have a nice soundboard of sound effects. We don't have today, but that's okay. Don't worry about it. It's still going to be a good show. And, you know, I think of that song, Lee, and Revolution, and
mm-hmm.
one of my favorites by the Beatles, of course, penned by John Lennon. And you have to wonder... If he were alive, he would be still only in his 70s. I think 76, something like that. Paul McCartney is 75. John Lennon was a little older, so 76. And you wonder.
But he would have been a spry 76.
Oh, absolutely. You wonder where he would be in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
What he would be thinking about this administration.
Oh my God.
And the chaos that's going on in the world. And
he wouldn't be quiet about it.
No,
that's
no.
For
you
sure.
know what? I like to think that he wouldn't. You know.
No, I don't think he would.
I hope not, because you know something. So many people start out one way, and then they kind of, as they go into later life, they become. I don't want to say they resign themselves to. You're really not going to make as much of a change. You know, you might have less energy, so you kind of. You're complacent. You're just like, you know, you let it happen. You do what you can in your own way. But as far as taking it to the streets and marching, I hope he would, you know.
Well, I think
I
he would
he
use
would.
His status to
yeah.
go out there and, you know, say things, you know.
Yeah. I mean, he did. I mean, his form of protest was always, you know, certainly nonviolent. I think that's where and you and I were discussing before the show, protest. It gets a bad rap because of the negative connotations. People view protests as something with underlying violence, and it has to get to, you know, you know, the old footage of the 60s, you see protests and you see people being hosed down and,
yeah.
and you know, German shepherds being unleashed on the crowd. Can that happen?
Sure. It can, but I don't know.
And it does.
I don't think it would be as bad, you know why? Because of all these different lawsuits that people would do now.
Well, you know something, again, there's unlimited funds if you're going to sue the city of New York. They somehow survive.
How come people that spill coffee on themselves from McDonald's get millions of dollars?
That was, I tell you something.
Because the coffee was hot.
No, let me explain something to you. And I'll never forget, that was like probably 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And that was someone who happened to get themselves a wonderful attorney. Because that actually started all of this.
Yeah.
As far as all these frivolous lawsuits. This lady, and it was her own fault. It says coffee is hot. You look at the cover,
mm-hmm.
and she just figured I'm driving, and of course I'm going to put the cup between my legs. It's boiling hot. Why not start the car? Bada boom.
No.
You know? And, you know, that's. But she had an attorney that said, listen, sweetheart, we got some money for you. You could sue because, and I don't know what, I think the only thing she probably could have sued for. It's a big thing. Was she
the one that was responsible for having like those
the writing on the cups,
that was, caution?
It was her, but she won something like $14 million.
Yeah, she won a lot of money.
And that was
then.
That was then. Now, I'm trying to think what the grounds were. Now I know that if you have a back injury, if things like that happen, you can't have intimate relations with your husband. That's a big thing. That's what most people will say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can no longer, you know, because it's a big thing. You can no longer serve as a wife. It's another episode for another day.
I've even heard of that.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I know many people that have been. Well, I can't have
sex with my partner.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a big thing. And you get big bucks now. I'm thinking that would be the only thing because nothing life-threatening, even if it was third-degree burns.
Unless, right, that you have third-degree burns.
Yeah, but still, the area was small. It wasn't life-threatening. Now, if you have third-degree bones, you have the burns all over your body, that's serious. But it was in a very specific area. Now, she might have had to have plastic surgery, and I understand that, but $14 million was a...
It's a nice profit there.
And like we were saying, for then.
Yeah.
For then, that would be like, I'm going to say it was 25 years, maybe 30 years ago. So that would be $14 million then is the equivalent of, I don't want to say it's double, but probably
no,
like
I would say about
20,
now. 25, yeah.
So it's good. And she was in her, I think, early 60s.
Yeah.
So she probably was going to outlive the money. I'm sure she had kids and grandkids, and I'm sure there.
But I remember her saying, oh, my God, I can't believe that she gets money for saying, yeah, coffee's hot. Of course coffee's
mm-hmm.
hot.
Mm-hmm.
This world is nuts.
Well, see, the whole thing was, and I guess this is part of the suit, if I decided to open the cup and just drink it down. Now, the burns that would happen to my tongue and my throat, but, you know, again,
it's impossible.
I know. I would never have swallowed it knowing it was that.
Right.
But I guess they're just saying... the potential for impact of damage is greater. But, I remember saying, to be a buddy, spill something hot on me. We'll
right.
make some money together. Just crazy. But that was the beginning of the frivolous lawsuits. And
that's
they haven't
true.
Stopped. And they have not stopped. And that's really it. And that's, you know, that's the state of the world.
Oh, yeah.
But
it's never going to stop.
Now, and you know what? And see,
that's why insurance is so much more money. You know, every time you go somewhere, you won't need insurance.
But
they cap it so high to cover themselves.
In certain, and I always use Europe. In certain portions of Europe, there is certain lawsuits that it could be reversible. So if you lose, you have to pay. For the attorney of the other, it keeps people at bay. It makes people think twice
mm-hmm.
before they decide to embark on making money. You know, and again, there are certain lawsuits that you say absolutely, absolutely, it was necessary. And but then you remember the other one. What was it? I'm going to say it was quite a few years ago, maybe 15 years. The Underdog balloon went into something
yes.
and fell on
yes.
this woman, and she had head trauma.
Yeah.
So
well, I could see that. I have
right,
to say, I have
right.
to see
she
that.
She had head trauma, but that see that's these. I mean, as comical as it seemed, and they no longer have Underdog because they kind of blamed the balloon.
Oh, poor Underdog.
I know. And they were saying that
he really went up, 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 and away.
Oh, well, no, he went down and sat right on her. But the thing is, I think they were saying because of the length of the balloon itself was what caused
it to fall like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you know,
I mean, those balloon. Every single balloon is huge.
But you know, the truth is. Something is always the possibility of something happening with things that tall, and you look, you've seen the police
held on strings
with people, and the space between the buildings, something is going to go awry. And if we, you know,
and that's not, you know, at Thanksgiving time,
mm-hmm.
the weather is always cold, blustery,
but if it's windy
and blustery. It's, you know, it's hard to control those balloons.
Even though they have a good amount of manpower on the ground.
Oh,
they
yeah,
have, like,
they do. But
20 people per balloon.
Right.
You know, and I say if you don't have enough people, bring in the Rockettes. They're there anyway. And they
right.
could they
well,
could
they're
use,
always
they,
there.
They're
always
there. And it's good for them to you know, warm up, especially if it's 20 degrees. And
it
our
usually is.
Guest who's
yes.
coming on. Now, you know what? She's a woman that doesn't like labels, I think. But I have to give a little. She's a poet,
her.
A musician, an activist. And like you and I were saying before, a lot of people shy away from being called an activist because of the negative connotations. People think, oh, you know, it has this harsher push than, I mean, you think about activism. Everybody is an activist to a point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if, for example, my mother-in-law was talking to me the other day, and again, she's a woman in her 80s. She never really protested anything in her life. But however, now listen to this. She buys things from Avon. So I said to her, Ma, you know what? Do me a favor. Really rethink this, because Avon has begun animal testing again.
Mm-hmm.
On the cologne, everything. So
but is she buying it because she likes the product or because her friend sells it and she wants to make her money?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Either or, that's her business. But it was my responsibility to say, you might want to rethink this because my mother-in-law loves animals. And she would never, and her response was, oh, well, that's not good. And that's a form of protest
mm-hmm.
in a very small way. Again, my mother-in-law's not going to take it to the streets. That's never been her. But in some way, you know, I think we all are responsible to push back, whether it's you don't buy something, you don't frequent the store. That's what we have to do.
Right.
But some people, like Rose Tang, who's coming on with us, you'll see her in Grand Central Station.
Yeah, she's
protesting.
All over the place.
You will
she's
see her, and she's not afraid of
her.
It. And yeah, and that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you something. There's something really wonderful in the camaraderie you have with people
right.
that you're making a stand with,
mm-hmm.
you're laying down across Grand Central
yep.
Station, and people cheer you on, and it's just really a good feeling. But let's let her talk about it. Let's bring her on. Rose Tang, where are you?
Hello.
I am here, Laurie.
Welcome.
Hey, darling, how are you? How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm happy. It's a nice sunny day. It's just
it's
too
beautiful
cold.
Out, yes.
Yeah, it is beautiful, but I'm indoor. Yeah.
You know,
so,
it's
what's
funny.
Up? Talking about
I was saying to Elise the other
activism.
Day.
Yeah.
Yes. You look at Facebook, and there's Rose Tang over there.
Mm-hmm.
And no, she's over here. And no, she's over here.
Yeah,
and then she
gets around.
And then she's got her gigs at night, and you're like,
that's
you get whiplash.
Social media is very misleading.
Well, you know, the truth mm-hmm. is you get whiplash keeping up with Rose Tang because she's doing this, she's doing that, and it's a beautiful thing. And it's a very rewarding thing.
Yeah, it's really good.
You're very kind. I overheard you girls talking about activists, the
yeah.
labeling.
Yes.
Yeah, this is the funny thing. When people say, oh, you're an activist, I say, well, I don't know. I'm certainly
mm-hmm.
active.
Mm-hmm.
I it took me a long time to accept this when people started calling me an activist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I never saw myself an activist.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't think so.
Yeah.
The only label I'm proud to carry is to be the survivor, a survivor of Tiananmen massacre.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason why I carry that label with me, like a heavy cross on my back, even though I'm not religious, is to raise the awareness of the massacre and to fight for justice of the victims' family members. And a lot of them have passed away or committed suicide before seeing any sign of justice, which is atrocious, unbelievable. Yeah, we still don't know the death toll of that massacre 30 years ago. So I carry this, and people say, "Why you were there? So how old are you now?" I said, "I'm fucking 51." And so what? And I said, and people, this is the thing. And speaking of Grand Central, the protest outside the Apple store there. So just to retrace it a little bit, give you a little bit of background. I've been working with Tibetan and Uyghur and Mongol activists and Hong Kong and Taiwanese activists over the last few years. And the Tibetan activists, the organizations here, they have been inviting me to their events and protests since I came out. It's really like coming out of the closet in a way.
Exactly,
it's the same sort of effect because I have a lot of LGBTQ friends who share their stories of coming out of the closet, especially in front of family members. And you hear all sorts of beauties and really, really interesting and a lot of loving stories as well. So about 6 years ago, 2013, there was this spate of self-immolations in Tibet. We're talking about one or two per week. I was absolutely shocked. It was very horrific to watch because the Tibetans risked their lives and jail terms to share the photos and videos on social media. And a lot of them ended up being arrested and sentenced to several years in prison because of that, just by sharing one video or one photo. And I read an article in New York Times talking about the collective silence among the Chinese here, especially the Chinese intellectuals and dissidents, about the Tibetan self-immolations. And I was absolutely shocked. I was actually more shocked by that than the self-immolations themselves. Of course, the self-immolations are tragic and shocking enough. And I felt really ashamed as somebody who's from China. I don't like calling myself Chinese anymore. I'll get into that in a minute. So I started sharing stories on social media, firstly on Facebook and later on Twitter, about the self-immolations. I thought, even though most of the mainstream media, international media outlets were not covering that story, because it's tricky to cover, because a lot of them see it as suicide, and also it's so graphic.
Without
sharing the photos or videos, it's hard to describe. Even to describe it is very, very hard with words. So I came out and started sharing stories about that. And, of course, I got censored by Facebook as well.
Of course.
Because
I knew it.
Then there were Chinese self-immolations as well. First, I thought, so Facebook sent me a warning and saying photos of Chinese men self-immolating were too violent and graphic, which is ironic. We know, like, we see plenty of stories of bombings and the victims in Syria, Iraq. It's okay to share stories of Muslim kids being bombed and being disfigured and really horrific images. It's okay to share images of them. That's not violence.
Sometimes I think that Facebook is very picky with who it is and, you know, right.
Clearly.
Yeah, exactly. And also, there are all this, the Chinese government, they hire they have hired hundreds of thousands of people to troll, to be internet trolls. So I suspect it could have been one of the, you know, some of those reporting to Facebook. And Facebook, you know, the dumbass Facebook, that, you know, those teens, they would just like do a blanket censorship and then delete those photos. And once I got an abstract painting, I did, and being taken down because people complained was nudity. It's abstract painting. So anyway, so at that time I started to share all these stories and images. Then the Tibetan people started to, because I can recognize Tibetan names written in English, so I started to befriend them. And the internet is very good for shy people like me. When I tell people I'm shy, people will say, come on, get out of here, bro.
You surprised me.
I am shy. When you see me, I was mostly working. I'm not shy when I'm working.
You're in a role.
So when I was a journalist, I wasn't shy as a journalist, but socially I'm actually shy. But anyway, so on the internet, I started to befriend Tibetans as well. I started to notice all these, postings by Tibetan groups and lots of pages and groups. Then people started wondering what's going on with this Chinese person advocating for Chinese. I am not surprised some Tibetans even suspected and even confronted me, calling me a Chinese spy. I understand that because there have been a lot of Chinese spies trying to infiltrate those communities.
Sure.
And then until one day I posted a photo of me dressed up in the traditional Tibetan dress called chupa in China, pointing my middle finger at the crotch of the statue of Mao Zedong.
That was part
of my people label it performance art. And that photo went viral everywhere, especially among the Tibetans, and people started wondering what's going on. So we're talking about like more than, I can't remember, tens of thousands of likes and thousands of shares. And people were just wondering, who's this Rose Tang? But the brave one started to comment and saying, oh, yeah, bravo, thank you very much, blah, 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 blah. And then I asked one of those who commented, I noticed he lived in New York, is a Tibetan man from Nepal, Kopasan Sherpa. And I asked him, I said, and I noticed he organizes all these Tibetan cultural events, which greatly interests me because I'm heavily influenced by Tibetan art. I learned from it a lot in my abstract expressionism paintings. But anyway, so I asked him, I said, if you have any more events, please invite me. So one of these events invited me in Jackson Heights, a stronghold of South Asians, including Nepalese and Tibetans. And it was so sweet at the basement of a Burmese, it's called Burmese Hall. It's a community center for the Burmese. And we even saw, you know, photos of Aung San Suu Kyi there, and then a portrait of the Dalai Lama. And I went there, and it's about them talking about their staple called Champa. It's roasted barley flour. The way to eat it is to mix it. We should go to Jackson Heights and do a foodie tour.
We really should. Yeah, definitely.
Continue,
Rose. Go ahead.
So anyway, so I went there and expecting just to meet people and say hello, pay respect, and they offered me the roasted barley flour, and we mix it with our own fingers with butter and milk tea. And salty milk tea, and the aroma of that food brought me back to the time, the beautiful summer in 1984, when I first visited Tibet, when I was a 15-year-old art student, painting and drawing there. I went there with my artist mother to follow the horse races, and her job was to collect the embroidery patterns of Tibetans' traditional clothing. And that left a huge mark on me and heavily influenced me, not just as an art student, but also as a person. So when we were eating that, and people were invited to talk a little bit. I didn't expect to talk, and then they invited me to speak a few words, and so I talked about that trip. And then I said to them, I said, I apologize to you as somebody from China for the atrocities the Chinese government committed on you and your country, because the Chinese government invaded Tibet in 1949-60 with the troops. They even took the airplanes and they bombed the nomads. They bombed the kids and the families in tents. And they sent the troops in, so they killed 1 million, more than 1 million Tibetans. The total population is only 7 million.
Oh, wow.
That's absolutely genocide and very little known. And,
sounds like a third of the population they took away.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Well, not one-third, one-seventh. Yeah. The total population was 7 million. Now there are only 6 million of them. Anyway, so I spoke about that, and I spoke about how brainwashed I was before, because we're brainwashed to believe it was a very primitive tribal society. It's very similar to the stories here of what happened to Native Americans, right? Very, very similar.
It's brave of you to say that, too.
Thank you. And of course, I covered the police brutality and discrimination against the Australian Aboriginals. So stories there are very similar as well. Same scenarios and very similar genocides. But anyway, so when I was speaking of that, we were brainwashed to believe it was righteous for the Chinese communist troops to liberate Tibet, to save them from the primitive and violent serfdom. We're shown pictures of thigh bones and skulls, thigh bones being used as drumsticks by lamas, Tibetan lamas, and skulls being used as oil lamps. And they were the Tibetan slaves and the serfs who were killed by the chiefs, chieftains or whatever, right? Which is all lie, because all those, they were Buddhist relics. The people's skulls or thigh bones, they were not killed for that. They died of natural causes and been preserved and been used for Buddhism. But anyway, so when I spoke about that, and the Tibetan, one Tibetan journalist, not journalist, activist, sitting there, took out his cell phone and took the video of it, only part of it, because battery died. And he put it on his Facebook, and it went viral. People were sharing it. Who's this Rose Tang? And then people started to call me activist. But that was a time when I started to realize I had to come back after this hiatus of more than 2 decades after Tiananmen Massacre. After Tiananmen Massacre, I went to Australia to study journalism. I became a radio journalist there. By the way, I really love your style of podcast. And it's radio for me. Yeah, radio is my favorite medium so far.
Absolutely.
Because it's very intimate and allows a lot of more time and space for discussion. But anyway, so that's when I became an activist. And the Apple Store thing is because I call him Timothy Crook, the Apple CEO. Timothy Crook, a few days after we protested there, guess what? He was rewarded by the Chinese government to be the president of the business school of Tsinghua University. Tsinghua University is like the MIT of China.
Mm-hmm.
The former and founder of the business school used to be the Chinese premier, Zhu Rongji, anti-corruption buster, very famous for fighting corruption, one of the you know, not so bad ones, you know, the best of the bad bunch, basically. So the protest was about Apple acting. effectively removed more than 1,000 apps from its app store, the VPNs, which would help allow people inside China and the Chinese occupied countries as Tibet and East Turkestan, Southern Mongolia, to access Google, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Gmail. And so Apple removed thousands of VPNs, including an app called hk.maps.live, which is a crucial app in Hong Kong used by the protesters to find the whereabouts of the cops, so to avoid to be arrested, to be beaten up by the cops, because the Hong Kong police had been very violent, shooting tear gas at stores, at residential buildings. We're talking about little kids being shot at, being pepper sprayed, and arresting people as young as 11 years old for shouting some slogans in the streets or just by being in the streets. And actively, the Hong Kong police, they barge into subway cars to just to beat up people indiscriminately. And so that app was a lifeline for the Hong Kong protesters and residents in general, and Apple removed it. And a few days after our protest, of course, our protest, we tried our best and we'll keep protesting. And Timothy Crook got that title, being the president of the business school of Tsinghua University. That's why these days everybody needs to be an activist. Otherwise, we're all doomed. So
exactly,
I don't mind
right.
being labeled as an activist.
And you know something? There are so many people.
Yes.
And again, I always go back to not everybody can do that. Not everybody can be in the street. Not everybody can have a sit-in or lay. A lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do something, even if it's writing your congressman, writing. There's always something that you could do, because a lot of people say, well, what's the difference? Well, there is a difference. There, and this is the perfect example. You did that, a few days later, it made a change. And that's what I always tell people. We have a voice.
And that's what you use it for.
And if nothing else, you vote. You know, when people say, well, what's the difference? You know, politics is corrupt. I agree. But the thing is, if you're not part of the process, you have no reason to complain. Go away. Don't complain when your taxes go up. Don't
exactly.
You have to do something.
Do something. Do something. Even as little, everything counts, as little as just sharing a post on social media, click like. You know, some people, they are so scared of me. I'm not a scared person. Just because of things I do, people are so scared, they don't even dare to click like.
Yeah.
They're afraid
exactly.
to click like on my Facebook. But then again, this is a little difference I think I managed to make. Whenever I see them in person, they would say, you're all over Facebook. I saw your such and such post. I agree. This and that. They got it talking. I said, oh, sorry. Oh, I did not know you. Look at my Facebook because you don't do anything. So I apologize for not knowing that. And then the person will be saying, because I don't want to be called as liking or clicking anything on your Facebook because the Chinese government. I'm talking about these are Westerners. These are Americans warning me, you should be careful. What are you doing? I mean, they're well-meant, of course. They're friends and acquaintances. They say, be careful. You're so critical of the Chinese government, blah, 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 blah. I said, what are you afraid of? So the worst thing that would happen to you is that your visa to China get ejected. And guess what? Don't go to China. Because why?
Exactly.
It's just for your personal safety. And a poet I met at a poetry, we did this poetry pop crawl in East Village last week. It was fantastic, organized by Jennifer Juno and Matt Walker, this beautiful couple. They're both poets. And so one poet was telling me he was flying to Thailand, and he had to change planes in China or some Hong Kong. He was flying Chinese, some Chinese-owned airlines. So the transfer had to be somewhere in China, but usually you don't have to get out of the airplane, to get out of the security or whatever, right? But they made him get, oh no, in Hong Kong, I think. They made all the passengers get out and go through immigration. So they were getting the faces scanned.
Yes.
And fingerprints. And I said, oh, now you're on the list. Sorry about that. So these days they even do DNA sampling. So whatever they can do to nail you. And in China now, guess what? A lot of more and more stores, they welcome you not to use cash or credit cards. Just stick your face there in front of the scanner. This is how scary it is now. Because China, a lot of its technologies, they steal. And they are not that advanced, even though we see this false picture of, the second biggest economy, all that stuff. A lot of the figures quoted by the economists and journalists are boosted and fake figures. But anyway, so this is the myth about the so-called China power, superpower. But the thing is, China's technology in surveillance and drones are at the world's best. This is how scary it is.
Yeah.
And in East Turkestan, where more than 1 million Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and Kyrgyz, and Hui's, mostly Muslims, even some Christians as well, even some Han Chinese, are being detained in concentration camps. In this place, they call it China's Xinjiang, which is now within China's map, northwestern China, bordering Pakistan, and Kazakhstan in the Gobi Desert. Same story like Tibet back in 1949, 70 years ago, invaded by the Chinese troops, and the country was called East Turkestan. And then, of course, lots of people got killed, got jailed, their language taken away, and their mosques now, the Korans are being burned, and the mosques, they have to hang up portraits of the Chinese, the chairman of the Chinese Communist Party. They call it the president, but he's not really the president. Xi Jinping, I call him Hitler, because he's worse than Hitler. And what's happening in East Turkestan, they call it Xinjiang. Xinjiang is the Chinese name for it. The name itself is very colonial. It's called, in Chinese, in Mandarin, it means new frontiers. So anyway, more than 1 million people are in the concentration camps there. Where's the world outrage? This is worse than
Nazi
Germany.
I'm shocked that these things still happen. You know, and
it's,
you know, to Elite's point, and as I'm listening to you and you're thinking about, you know, I thought we were past that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say one thing, and I'm the ultimate optimist. As long as we have egos and there's money to be gained and land to be conquested, we will always do this to each other. And that's really it. I mean, it's just amazing that mankind has sustained as long as we have an evolution, because we constantly need this. And let's be serious. We only do this to each other
only
for profit of land or anything for financial reimbursement.
Yep.
So will it ever stop?
No.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. And that's, I'm an optimist.
You know what I've been writing poems about that, and I started to think, I'm really tired of protesting, actually. I've been protesting all my life since I was a kid. I've been marching the streets since I was a kid. Of course, when I was a kid in China during the Cultural Revolution, I was born in 68, and the Cultural Revolution, the height of the Cultural Revolution, I was born a dissident. I had no choice because my father was a dissident. My parents, both parents. When I was born, my father had already been thrown into jail. He's only an artist, and he was thrown into jail because of his questioning, not even mild criticism, questioning of the Mao Zedong's policies. He wrote it in his personal diaries. That became
How long was he in jail for? How long
11
did he stay
years.
In jail?
11
How many?
Years. 11
Are you kidding?
Years. Yeah,
oh,
I grew up without
goodness.
A father.
Yeah.
So and it's just like I was made into this.
Yeah.
I had no choice.
No, you don't.
And now I'm still protesting. I'm 51. And
good.
I'm sick of protesting. And I really think we should start taking charge instead
yes.
of resisting. I don't like that word, resistance. It's almost like S&M thing. It's like,
mm-hmm.
oh, yeah, you inflict this pain on me. I'm resisting. It's like, what? Why can't you just fight and take charge? So my new thing now, I think, is that I want to push this agenda, is that
mm-hmm.
instead of trying to survive and protest their world, their
mm-hmm.
norms, we got to start calling the shots and build our world.
Exactly.
This is what we need to do. We need
yep.
to set up a whole new, brand new system and tell them
yep.
to fuck off. Really.
Yeah, exactly.
If they don't
exactly.
comply, they're going to be doomed, not all of us. Because if we follow their way or resisting their way, which is taking forever, like Greta Thunberg and a lot of those little kids, you know, teenagers
yep.
in the streets.
Yes.
Whenever I see
love
teenagers
it.
In the streets protesting, I know it's bad, very bad.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what
yeah,
I was doing
like
in China.
Worse.
See how bad, yeah, see how bad and worse China is now, right? When
yeah.
my daughter, who's 13 years old now, and she said, when, you know, kids like her, when that election was happening, she could not sleep that night. She was only 10 years old in 2016.
Oh, wow.
A lot of the kids were depressed.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm. yeah.
one of her friends we ran into on the bus, and she's a lovely, lovely, you know, girl. Both her parents are from India. They run a little deli store in Brooklyn. They're just such sweet, gentle people and vegans. So this little girl, when we asked her, I said, hey, what's going on? What did you do at school? Because they went to this public school, really nice school in Brooklyn. And
mm-hmm.
she said, oh, we learned to sing this song, What a Wonderful World. I said, wow, it's a great song, isn't it? Oh, great, you're learning it. She said, no, I hate that song. It's not a wonderful world. It's an ugly world. I hate it. And I said, oh, my God, this is what the kids are getting. This is bad,
yeah,
bad,
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, it's really
right?
bad. And it's instilled
yeah,
in their head
I've
for the rest of their life.
To them. I've
yeah.
apologized to them. We messed up. Really.
Yeah.
Sorry for swearing
yeah.
here. We really fucked up good.
Yeah.
We
oh, yeah.
as the whole humanity. And I feel really bad. Me as an adult, I've been fighting all my life. And we need more people joining. And it's not an option anymore. It's not an option. We have to
yeah.
start thinking more actively. Instead of, like, I think a lot of people are getting protest fatigue now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying don't protest. But we have to start working actively on new things and change the whole system, the whole electoral
yeah.
college, you name it, the whole so-called democratic system
mm-hmm.
and the voting and the voter suppression. Since 2016, that fateful election day, I've been volunteering on every election day as a poll worker, as an interpreter. And
mm-hmm.
I was very frustrated. A lot of the people I volunteer with, they're moms, people of color, mostly
yeah.
people of color, mostly women, and mostly from projects. It's great for our sisters, you know, to connect, right? And we're all
yeah.
frustrated, and
yeah.
trying to get people into the door to vote, but even that, like, look at the voter turnout of that 2016. Election
uh-huh.
record voter turnout in New York,
yeah.
and look what happened. And yeah, we need to connect more, I really think, and have more dialogue with different aspects and different groups of people of different political persuasions. And I keep
yeah.
saying to a lot of Americans, instead of reading 1984, reading a lot of books about dictatorships, why don't you just
yeah.
talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends? There are a lot of
yep.
immigrants and refugees who can tell you a lot of life real stories
yep.
of all these things, dictatorships, you know, wars and prosecution, persecution, you name it.
Well, see, I think that's what the one thing that I love about New York in general is you are, whether you want to be or not, you are, we're in a melting pot. We are, we ride the trains every day with people that are from different backgrounds, different faiths, different cultures, and that's the beauty. And the nice thing that, I mean, again, New York gets a negative rap, but the beautiful thing is that we engage with each other. We do. Maybe not as much. I mean, we still have areas of bigotry.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, we are willing, and I always think it's a privilege to learn about somebody else's culture. I know mine. I've had it with mine. I've known mine for 57 years. I don't need to know any more about my culture. I want to know about somebody else.
Yeah.
I want to know about their ancestry. That's what I want. And it's a beautiful thing.
I think it's very interesting learning everybody's culture.
I love it. It's a privilege to.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, the thing is, human race, since the birth of human race in Africa, and we've been migrating forever and connecting, we're made this way. We're social animals.
We are.
And
mm-hmm.
if the people in power or who got power illegally, they segregate us. They started the, you know, nation state is a very new thing. And think about those, you know, talking about refugees, think about those people showing up at Ellis Island and people showing up just on a boat somewhere. They didn't have any passports or visas. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
All they
had
to do was just showing up, right?
Right. That's exactly
and nobody wants to be a refugee. And now it's like a huge problem. When I was in Australia in the mid-90s, and it was really hard for me to push a story about immigration or any story about racism, discrimination against Aboriginals. It's very, very hard to push that. And I was pigeonholed and stereotyped as the ethnic affairs reporter. So I'm a colored person here, an immigrant. So she's ethnic. What is ethnic, by the way? And I go to pharmacists in the United States. I always crack out laughing when I go to the hair dyeing and hair products aisle, and there's this label, ethnic hair.
Yep.
And I go, what the fuck is that?
Mm-hmm.
Ethnic hair. But it's just hair, okay? Like, I think they meant, you know, hair of color people.
Mm-hmm.
Hello? Yeah, here we are again. Segregation everywhere. And in people's minds and in physical worlds, everywhere. It's a very artificial thing.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of areas we could do by starting by, like, the use of words. Like, once an American friend living overseas coming back and wanted to get together, and she asked me to recommend an ethnic restaurant in New York. I said, what the hell is an ethnic restaurant? Ethnic food. Okay, to me, ethnic food is McDonald's. Right? Like, what is it? Right?
True.
Come on. Yeah, so, but here's the great change I've noticed, especially over the last 3 years, which is very positive, is that racism, the stories of racism, is mainstream now.
Yeah.
Nearly all the mainstream news outlets are covering stories on racism.
Yeah.
Positive stories are mainstream now. Positive, say, somebody like said, all these homeless people, blah, 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 right? When I was being trained as a journalism student, the major thing we're trained for is that what's newsworthy? None of these stories should be newsworthy. Who gives a shit, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
somebody being good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
very
somebody
true.
Being good, doing good deeds, that's not a news. Nobody would want to read it. So we're being told to rank this newsworthiness of the stories. We're giving this list. That was the first class of my journalism class as a freshman. It was really hilarious. We're giving a list of stories. Some were fake, so some were new, made up or whatever, just some scenarios. I remember everybody got it wrong because in the list, I can't remember, like a dozen items. One is the cabinet reshuffle, national politics. And the other one is shark attack. Somebody got attacked by a shark off a beach. Everybody ranked, most of the people ranked the cabinet reshuffle as the most important news story. Shark attack, the least or among the least important stories. And the professor said, wrong. Shark attack is number one news story, front page story. This is how bad it is, right?
Wow. Well, I mean, let's
somebody
look at
this. Somebody being attacked by a shark. So it's blasters. They're talking about the blasters of the audience, of the readers.
That's exactly
right. Like people go for the shark attack stories, right?
But look at our media now. What are the highest rated shows? Reality shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And you know what? Again, people could say whatever they want about it. You know, a lot of people, like, will watch certain ones, and that's fine. If it's a guilty pleasure, that's fine. But the thing is, you know, and more shows happen. Why? Because there's an audience. There's a seller to every buyer. And this is what we've come down to. No one's really investing in making a great foreign film or a documentary. No.
There's no money.
It's reality
there's
TV.
No money.
And that's where we've been.
There's no money.
That's exactly right.
I know a lot of great, fantastic, world-class indie filmmakers and aspiring young filmmakers, filmmaking students. I'm talking about very idealistic students from China who study filmmaking in New York. And I'm really moved by that because everybody knows there's no money in that. Journalism, there's no money and fewer jobs. And here's the thing. The orange turd, I refuse to say his word, his name, because he's revolting and also it's a trademark. I don't want to be his volunteering advertiser. So we know who he is, the orange turd. The turd said something about CNN doing the fake news. He's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fake news. It's packaged news.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for CNN for 3 years, CNN International, as a producer in Hong Kong. I was very frustrated. The news literally we called it packages, TV packages. Mm. Packages. Mm. So it's all about packaging facts and figures, sound bites, and package them, put them together that they're products. No matter if people's miseries, mostly people's miseries or wars, disasters, package them as commodities. And on the night of the election, the CEO of CNN, Jeff Zucker, I call him Zucker, announced and was quoted by CNN, of course, saying that was a historical night for CNN. He congratulated the staff for achieving the highest rating.
This is how despicable
they are. It's the management. The journalists are wonderful. Even like Fox News. I was interviewed by Fox, Neil Cavuto's show, twice in October, and I was astounded. The journalists were very professional, very nice. Mm-hmm. When I was invited by them, it took me a while to make the decision because I don't watch Fox. I don't watch TV news in general.
Yeah, I know.
And Fox is a propaganda machine. And I thought, oh, my God, me appearing on Fox, it's a risk for me, too, because I have to protect my reputation. Now I'm a kind of a semi-public figure, right? And I thought, oh, my God, should I go? So I thought, well, no, Neil Cavuto, he's known for, you know, his mild criticism of an orange turd.
Mm-hmm.
And also I thought it's important to reach out to their audience.
I think so. I think you're right.
Very important. And one of the bands I formed with some very idealistic, hardworking, and wonderful young American musicians, we formed this band called On the Way. In the summer last year, after I was invited to tour in California to perform at the Tiananmen Massacre anniversary event, and invited by Fang Zheng, this wonderful man who's the chairman of the Chinese Democratic Education Foundation based in San Francisco, his both legs were crushed by a tank during the massacre. Wonderful man. And he drives Uber to make a living to support his cause. So anyway, so when we went to perform in San Francisco, and later on in the desert in California near Nevada, in the audience, we found there were a lot of locals coming to see it. And the locals were mostly the rednecks. And they were
really?
So nice. Yes, they were so nice. Farmers, working class people, and one Native American woman, and because it was in a sculpture park called Liberty Sculpture Park, run by a bunch of Chinese dissident and artists.
Nice.
You girls are all welcome to go there. They run this residency there, artist residency there, and a lot of events. And but anyway, so when we performed there, we started to notice this rednecks, and you know the rednecks, the classic rednecks, you know, sporting Mojave hairstyle, they came in the pickup trucks, very classic rednecks, and they have a lot of sympathy for us.
Wow.
And they were asking all these things about the dictatorship or whatever. So I had this idea of taking the band or a few bands, and you both are invited, going around the red states. Let's do it. Girls, let's do it. Especially the red states. We do not have to counter-brainwash them, trying to recruit them to be Democrats or Green Party or whatever. Not Republican Party. But we could just like tell life stories.
Yeah.
The Tiananmen concerts, and Laurie, you and John came to perform. What a big honor. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was our pleasure.
Thank you.
That was a great night, wasn't it?
Thank you. Lots of food. So the food was cooked by that team from California.
Oh.
They drove all the way from the desert of California.
Isn't that nice?
About 10 of them. They cooked 10 dishes. So they drove all the way here to pick up more than 100 arts from an exhibition after the massacre. And one of the dissidents, a Tiananmen student leader called Zhou Fengso, he organized and he acquired this huge collection. And the paintings you saw, right? They're all on the doors, right?
Oh,
they're like installations.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They were being carried and driven the next day back to California to that sculpture park, and they're building a museum there, Tiananmen Museum there. So anyway,
that was really cool.
The connection. So this is how beautiful it is, like those events. It's about connecting people, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
My slogan for that concert is to heal, connect, party, then we go out protest.
That's exactly right. But see, that's
the
thing.
It's a one-stop shop, right?
Well, you know, and I agree with your point, because the thing is, the more red states blue goes to, the more because the thing is, it's very easy to say, well, I'm going to stay in my yard. This is my yard. You don't agree with me, and I'm not going to speak to you. And, I mean, so many people's families are breaking up because of the political climate. And the truth is, I always say, separating yourself from people is not – all you're going to do is create a further divide. At least if people see, look, we have more in common than we do in contrast. So let me learn your language. Your language of thought, your language of sympathy. Let me know what you're about, and maybe you'll see me clearer. Or maybe I'll know something about you. Agree or disagree, doesn't matter. But we can't isolate ourselves and say, "Well, I'm never going to speak to a Republican. I'm never going to." It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Yeah, Green Party in July they had their annual national convention.
Yeah.
One of my Facebook friends who happened to be the co-chair of the national co-chair of the Green Party, and she had been following my Facebook post for the last few years, and she invited me to give a workshop there at the Green Party, and it was nice to connect with them. How can I say? So the Green Party, they were really eager because I was very frustrated by this two-party system happening everywhere, you name it, you know, in all the major countries, right? We don't need to go through that list. And but the minor parties, their system is not working for them either. So Violet Rose Zetola, the national co-chair, who invited me, and I was really intrigued why she invited me, right? And it really clicked with her that this what happened in Tiananmen and what's happening in Hong Kong. And her idea was asking me to share with Green Party members activism. We share our experiences and tips and help each other. So I ended up, I thought, oh, okay, just a speech about Tiananmen or something. I ended up, they designed it as a workshop. We discussed what's the best way to do this activism thing and make change. In whatever ways we can. And that's really intriguing. And then Violet is saying, let's do a big bus. We bus around and tour around the country. They said, yeah, great. That's what I've been thinking about too. So, you know, through all this activism, and we collect and connect with people along the way. And the forces become stronger. One person is small not noticeable, but I always call myself, I'm a small potato, but I won't shut up. It just came out in an interview by Wall Street Journal. And I said, look, I'm not famous, and I don't want to be famous. I'm a small person, literally small person, small potato. But a bunch of small potatoes together, we can do big things, right?
Exactly right. And it's a link in the chain. Can, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And Violet said, I'm a weaver. I said, I'm a connector. I love connecting people, right?
That's right.
And Laurie,
I think that's the best thing.
And Elite, you're doing all this too with your podcast.
Yeah.
Not just call for arms, but also connecting tool. They have their tool of power. We, or tools of power. We have our tools of power. We have our weapons of mass destruction.
Yes, yes.
Our
peace
weapons, right?
And I think that the biggest weapon of mass destruction is silence and complacency. And that's, I think, what this whole thing
that's
is about.
Getting
out there, opening your mouth, standing up for something, saying, I won't buy in this store, I protest this store, I'm not going to shut. That's how we do it. For the people that don't want to get out in the streets and walk or demonstrate, that's fine. It's not for everybody. But everybody could do something and just be socially aware. And, I mean, for God's sake, that's not that hard a thing to do. It really isn't. Rose,
well,
before
for
we
a lot
let
of
you go,
so.
I know. Before we let you go, any gigs or anything that you wanna talk about? Anything on your calendar that you'd like to shout out right now?
Oh, on the 15th of November, there's this. I think it's an all female called Unruly Jam Collective. I don't know the venue yet. I've been invited to improvise by this kick-ass theremin player, Nebula. Her stage name is Nebula, the Velvet Queen. She's fantastic, and I danced to her playing when she was playing a duo with guitarist Federico Balducci, who's also an amazing connector, who's a psychologist by trade, but a kick-ass Puerto Rican guitarist, and we're in a few bands together. So anyway, so November 15 is the gig. I don't know the venue yet. And November 26 is our new trio with Yumi Ishito, saxophonist from Japan, and Wen Qingwu from Taiwan. We're going to perform at Lawrence Austin, John Picaro's book party. Congratulations.
Thank you for the plug. Thank you for the plug, darling. Yeah, that's going to be great.
You're asking me for gigs, right?
Yeah. That's it. Perfect. And you know what? I'm going to contact you offline later. And what I usually do is I like to post the little things that we spoke about today and give you, you know, if you have the name of the venue for the 15th, and I'll post it on our Facebook page tomorrow.
Yes, please. Yeah, I'm going to shoot her a message now. Yeah.
Perfect.
I'd love it if you to meet her. She's great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that'd be perfect. So, Rose, thank you so much for coming on.
Yes,
and you'll come on again, please.
Thank you, Elite. Thank you, Laurie.
Thank you. Bye-bye, sweetheart. Have
bye-bye.
Have a great
day.
Thank you. That was a nice trio, eh?
I loved it. I loved it, baby. Have a good one, sweetie.
Enjoy.
Bye-bye, Rose.
Thank you, darling.
You're welcome, sweetie. That was wonderful.
Yeah,
was,
very informative.
This woman has boundless energy.
Yeah,
you know,
sounds
and
it.
It's a wonderful thing. Well, being involved as a survivor at Tiananmen Square, the massacre, that was like a month long. I mean, it was just horrendous. Probably one of the worst things that has happened in recent past. I'm not talking about, you know, World War II. Just absolute horror, and being a survivor is just, you know.
Well, at least
that,
you could talk about it and, you know, try
that,
and get
that could motivate
the information out there that it never happened again.
And like I said, I would love it, but just like, and I never want to say that it's men's fault, but I will say this, that most of the atrocities that have happened in the world were happened because of
men
in power. And I'm not saying every
only
man.
Only men in power.
And I'm not saying every man, I mean, that wasn't compassionate, wasn't thoughtful, and didn't want to invade.
No, there's nothing to do with
but
that.
But I always go back to my, and it's a very simplistic theory, but if the powers that be, if the heads of countries and states were women, there would be a reasonable detour towards a war because no mother wants their child to die.
Yep.
And that's just the way it is. Again, that's a more simplistic approach to it, but that is what I think is it in a nutshell.
Hopefully it'll be like that in the future.
And hopefully, you know, look as we're listening to her and you hear all the horrible things that are happening, and again, why? Land, money, ego. Three things.
Yep.
It's always about that. It's how much you have, you know.
How much more you want.
And hey, look, everybody likes money, but how many homes can you live in at the same time? How many cars can you drive at the same time, for Christ's sake? Come on.
No, it's just never enough.
Realistic.
You get very greedy.
Be realistic. And I tell you, that's one of the, and I'm not the most religious person, but that is one of the seven deadly sins.
Mm-hmm.
It's just horrible. It's just really horrible.
Now we know why.
Gluttony and just.
Agreed.
Just terrible. But, yeah, she was wonderful. And I'm glad we're going to see her again on the 26th. She'll be there shooting. So we'll all get to hang out. And that is our show.
Yes.
That's our show in a nutshell. And we had a lively conversation, and that's the best thing, a very informative show. And we had a few people calling in that we couldn't get to because we didn't want to interrupt. I'm sure if I had said to her, we might have a call and people might want to ask you questions, she would have been fine, but I was not going to take anybody on.
No, if you're
listening and you called in, we saw the board light up, but, you know, I just didn't want to
interrupt her.
Intrude upon her dialogue. But that's it. But there'll be plenty of time. We'll see all her information up on Facebook tomorrow. And that's it.
That's it.
Thank you, my lovely Elite, for riding shotgun.
Oh, thank you.
Another week.
For having me.
Absolutely. And everybody listening, listen to the content of what we were saying. Go out and make some sort of contribution by way of think of things that are socially conscious, at least one thing a day. Try to make the right decision. Try to embrace people. Try to look past the differences And let's just
be kind to each other.
And just head in the right direction. And just follow. My mother used to always say, follow your conscience.
Yep.
And it'll never lead you the wrong way. And then when my aunt used to say, take the high road, there's less traffic. And that's the sad truth. There's always less traffic on the high road. So stick to the high road, people. We will see you next week. Elise, my darling, have Nina take us home.
You got it.
There we
go. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye, people.